And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, did you see the poll that was taken in Pennsylvania this last week? If the governor's race was taking place now, who would you vote for? And it turns out that Shapiro beat Garrity by 17 points, and he beat Mastroianni by 18 points. I thought, and you and I have talked about this, that Garrity was overwhelmingly popular and Mastroianni was, you know, nowhere. And look, they both have the same amount of support, and the same amount of support is way below what Shapiro has. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Something's wrong there, right?
Yeah, that kind of surprises me. Garrity, in her last race for her second term as treasurer of the Commonwealth, got the highest vote total of anybody ever in Pennsylvania, even more than Shapiro got when he won for governor against Mastroianni. So I have never quite understood her appeal, but she's been a top vote getter. She won against a fairly popular, the first time, a popular treasurer, Joe Torricelli, and she seems to have some sort of a base somewhere, considering she comes from one of the most rural counties up there in the northern tier. Was it Bradford or Tioga County?
Well, I think she's from Bradford.
Yeah. But she's got something going for her. I thought part of it was the religious group. But Mastroianni, don't forget, is played on his religious themes as well the last time. It didn't work for him. But he's seeing something as well, because he would not be getting back into a governor's race after being beaten so soundly the last time if he didn't think he had a chance of getting nominated. After he lost, the Republicans had a lot of sour grapes about him, that he hurt the down ballot tickets and everything. Don't forget, the Republicans lost control of the state house by a single vote.
He refused to give interviews to the press. So he really ran a campaign aimed only at mobilizing his base, which he figured was much bigger than it really turned out to be.
Yeah, well, he thought he had the whole MAGA movement behind him. But he turned off a lot of people, a lot of the more centrist Republicans that still kind of have things in the Commonwealth. So,
but Garrity is. How about Garrity? Garrity is no liberal. She's MAGA all the way. And as I understand it, privately, she hews to the Vance theocracy theme, just like Mastroianni does publicly.
Yeah, she's MAGA with a prettier face.
Yeah, that's right. Good.
That's it.
Yeah.
But you know, the theocracy thing is not going away.
It's getting stronger.
Yeah. And we've seen things this week, some articles that you and I were talking about that appeared, interviews. There used to be a guy, I believe his name was David Palmer, and he used to go around to all these churches telling people what they'd like to hear. You know, he was a contrarian, and he made his money that way, saying that the United States is a Christian nation. Mm-hmm. And people would believe him and, you know, pay him for the lecture and this or that. And I think he probably had a book or two out there. But it was a fringe movement.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's kind of moved beyond the fringes, and it's much more in the open on these things. The only thing is that there are, as religion is wont to do, there are competing or conflicting versions of which Christianity we should be. And that's what the founders wanted to avoid. they knew the history of Europe. They knew the slaughters that went on over Christian, mostly under generic Catholic versus Protestant, but there were all sorts of other things as well. Some of it kind of came to our shores, you know, the Puritans in Massachusetts forced out Roger Williams. He had to go to Rhode Island, and the Catholics had to, they got a grant to, you know, to have Maryland. So they got out of the hair of the Protestant King of England type of thing. The Quakers as well. They got Pennsylvania, so to speak. But these new movements are really kind of wacky, but there's money behind them and force behind them. There was the fellow in who was interviewed in the New York Times this week who wants to have, he doesn't like the term Christian nationalism, but you know, it's a Protestant version of Christianity that he views. On the other hand, he says
that theocracy is what he's aiming for. He just doesn't think he can get it so quickly. It may take a few hundred years, but he's working at it.
He's working at it. Yeah. God grants him the long life to do it. Yeah. You know, we've been kind of ruled by a version of Catholic theocracy for a number of years now through the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
Where their members are Opus Dei followers since Scalia, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Clarence Thomas, who's a convert.
Mm-hmm. Alito,
Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Coney Barrett adheres to a different Catholic doctrine that's out there, but
it's a right wing Catholic doctrine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. These are all right wing Catholic doctrines. You know, and they're all. They don't like the popes.
I was just saying that they hated the last pope and they can't stand the current pope.
Yeah, even though he's an American, you know,
especially because he's an American.
Yeah, the their line is the pope ought to be a Catholic. You know,
well their line is the pope should stick to the church and not worry about the world. But isn't the whole thing that they promote is they should worry about the world?
Yeah, and they don't, you know, the Pope sets Catholic doctrine, not them. So they're trying to reverse the whole thing. They want to be the Pope,
right?
On that, but again, you know, we've got to remind people the dangers of theocratic thinking. You know, the Pope came out this week and he said, "Look, you're not pro-life if you're for the death penalty." Mm-hmm. And all these right-wing Catholics are usually for the death penalty,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And we've had these reminders, both in Catholic and Protestant denominations, reminding people of the teachings of Jesus. You know, be kind to strangers, feed the poor, clothe the naked, that kind of thing, which doesn't get, you know, enacted into law. You know, when they have a chance to feed the poor or feed the children, they cut SNAP benefits and proclaim, you know, while they wear religion on their sleeves.
I'm not able to understand how it's possible for them to ignore half of their theology or a third of their theology. I can understand from the Protestant point of view, they don't bother with. A lot of them, you know, the Calvinist tradition doesn't bother with anything except personal salvation. But there is the social strain in Catholic theology. Now, I don't really care about any of it. The whole trend of history for the last 1,000 years is to the separation of church and state, that the public sphere is public and the religious sphere is private. And that's why we have the separation of church and state, not only in America, but in all forward-looking countries. That was one of the great... triumphs of the French Revolution, and it was the Jesus French Revolution that emancipated the Jews because they were able to end the establishment of religion. So
but render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God that which is God's. They've seemed to have forgotten that, And of course, that's one
well,
of the...
Well, but the New Apostolic Reformation reverses it and says, you know, that they have this concept of seven mountains, that the Protestant evangelical tradition should rule every one of the seven mountains, meaning education, culture, the government, and so forth and so on. All of life. All of life.
Right.
So they want to go back to what? To, now, I don't know, the Holy Roman Empire?
You know, you talk about one of those pillars being education. They're ruling education in all of the states that have the 10 worst education history
exactly.
system. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I heard a comedian this week, and he said that, you know, I'm from Alabama, and I was talking to one of our teachers, and I was telling her that Alabama was 49th in education. And she looked at me and said, well, who was 40-10th? He said, then I went over and I said the same thing to a teacher in Mississippi, and she didn't even get the point.
She didn't get the point. Okay.
And those are the states. West Virginia, Wyoming, Alabama,
Louisiana,
Mississippi,
yeah.
The Arkansas, the gamut, Oklahoma,
and Louisiana has abolished public education. It's all charter school.
Wonderful.
Exactly.
Yeah, and Oklahoma, where they want the Bible's got to be read, but which version of the Bible? Remember, the guy wanted to buy only Donald Trump Bibles for the schools.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
turned out that the Donald Trump Bible left out some of the American Constitution. Although why the Constitution should have been there at all is a question, but the Constitution they put in was that it got rid of the amendments they didn't like. They just didn't include them in printing it. And that's really in line with how the Bible has evolved. It was scribes and the way the scribes happened to write it that determined what later generations read.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's a separate matter.
But the
point is, this is not just a Christian thing. Because Charlie Kirk, I saw from reading a little bit about Charlie Kirk, Charlie Kirk's... who stood for all the things we're talking about. Christian should, run the country. It should be a Christian country and so forth and so on. Was financed by the David Horowitz Freedom Institute. So here we had a wonderful alliance of the atheist Jew, David Horowitz, with the evangelical Christian, Charlie Kirk. Reactionary ideas are not limited to one religious group.
No, they'll take their support where they can find it.
And they're everywhere. They're everywhere. The wonderful thing about religion is it's so amorphous that you can find a quote and apply it as you wish.
Yeah. And we have J.D. Vance, who's a convert to Catholicism, married to a Hindu, I believe. His main backer, Peter Thiel, is going around the country lecturing about the evils of the Antichrist.
Peter Thiel, who comes from South Africa, raised in South Africa, raised in the Boer tradition of South Africa, which is an extreme right-wing Protestant tradition, right?
Yeah.
Who absolutely believes that there are subhumans. That's what they religiously believe, not only scientifically believe. They know that it's true because they've got that in their catechism or whatever the hell they call their foundational documents. Now lives in America where he can proselytize and does proselytize to people raised in a scientific society of point of view, which comes from what? The 8th century? In the name of technological progress.
Well, if you want to talk about the problems with the merger of religion and governance, and the 8th century, you're talking about Islam and all the all the problems in the world that we have with fundamental Islam everywhere.
That's right, with fundamental Islam. But don't forget that at a certain point in Islam's history, when they conquered Spain, in Jewish history, the period of time when the Muslims ruled in Spain, several hundred years, in Jewish history is called the Golden Epoch.
Yeah, well, the Moorish Spain.
Yeah, Moorish Spain gave the Jewish population wonderful conditions, which the Christians refused to do.
Yeah, and also to at some points in the Ottoman Empire as well.
Yeah,
the advances, but
in general, we don't want religious government. That's the whole point. You want to be religious, but that's not how society can be organized. It just can't.
Right. You want people who are who have a sense of morality, which for some comes with religion, but a lot of people it's inherent anyway. They don't need religion. You know, there are plenty of atheists who won't steal or commit adultery or murder.
Solidarity is a non-religious concept, right? Solidarity involves, comradeship, caring for the downtrodden, supporting the oppressed. That's what solidarity is about. That's not a religious concept. That comes out of it. Class solidarity, for example, that's not a religious concept. So there are many ways of deriving bad ethics, and there are many ways of deriving good ethics. You want to do it in the religious way? Go do it. But you can't bring that into the public sphere, despite the fact that these people say you can only have a public sphere founded on religion. No, we had that. We had that. We had religious wars for hundreds and hundreds of years as a result of it.
Yeah.
The only way we escaped it was by separating the religion from the state. And not only did we have it in the West, the same thing happened in the East, in Asia, among Hindus, Buddhists. The Japanese have their own,
Shinto.
Shintoism of a Buddhist outcome. I mean, every religion, is infallible. And if you don't like it, my God says you got to go. Well, that with atomic weapons, the whole world will go. If that's allowed, therefore you can't have a religious state. But that's what these people want.
Yeah. Yeah. But in some ways we're having this battle now on Capitol Hill over the shutdown of the government, and the Democrats are fighting for things like health care that was cut, the supports for the Affordable Care Act. And you have these, like Speaker Johnson, these self-proclaimed religious people who have harmed the poor and the lesser by their policies and their budgets. So where they have a proclamation of religion, but they don't follow the teachings.
Right.
It's that, I mentioned SNAP, for instance, cutting. That's been cut and what have you. And and it's not just on religious things now. With the administration, they've got a big problem with the farmers. Mm-hmm. You're going to have food is going to be going to waste.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the tariffs, China stopped buying soybeans from the United States. And all these farmers are stuck. They have nowhere to sell, nowhere to store it, and therefore they have no income. And they're now they're trying to get them some sort of a subsidy.
Trump says he'll use the tariff money to subsidize them. So what's the point of the tariff?
Well, they lost $150 billion, and he's going to give them $50 billion or $40 billion back, which doesn't cover it. It's going to be interesting to see, what the support does in that regard. I mentioned SNAP, that they used to buy up food stocks to send to schools and whatever, and to allow people to buy products, farm products. That's been cut. It's interesting times, and the Democrats have not cracked at this point.
Well, except for Fetterman.
except for Fetterman, but he was never really on board with this. You know, he's not one that cracked, you know, that came over. Now, the independent Angus King said he's considering, he was one of three Democrats that voted to reopen the government in the Senate. He said he's considering with, I think he said he's considering withdrawing his vote. And I think Jean Shaheen, who has voted not to reopen it, you know, previously she had wanted in previous years to do that, and she's been holding pretty strong, but she's not up for re-election. She's retiring. Mm-hmm. By the way, up there in New England and Maine, where King comes from, it looks like the governor is going to jump into the race against Susan Collins. I'm still not sure Susan Collins is going to stand for re-election, although I think she will. I don't think she's formally declared yet.
No, she hasn't. She hasn't.
But she's going to, you know, she's going to put her finger up to the wind like she always does.
Yeah. But in Maine is where you had this Oysterman, right? Who,
yeah.
Name I can't recall, who is actively campaigning for the Democratic nomination.
Yeah.
In the style of a number of Democrats who are workers or come from working class background and who are much younger.
Yeah, he's a populist.
He's a populist. The governor of Maine is not a populist, and she's in her high 70s.
Yeah.
And she was apparently targeted by Schumer, and he was pressing her a lot to jump in. And if she has now jumped in, so that's a victory for Schumer, but I'm not sure it's a victory for the Democrats.
Yeah. And we'll see what their primary does. I'm trying to think. Well, of course, we had the government, Russ Vought and his Project 2025 is firing people now, right and left. The one thing the Democrats figured out, though, was they didn't cave into his threats of firing people because they realized he was going to do it anyway.
Exactly.
And he's been doing it.
He's been doing it. So he laid off another 4,000 to 5,000, right?
Yeah. And the only thing here is that he's firing people without adhering to the legal notice that they require, the 30 days notice.
But so what? He's laying off people without and telling them, I'm not going to pay you for the money that we're not giving you, even though the law specifically says you have to do that.
And some of this is very Trumpian, not paying people. That's what he used to do when he was, when he was running his company. You know,
that's right.
You work for us, but we're not going to pay. We'll find a reason not to pay you.
Exactly.
So the
best reason being, you can't make me.
That's it. That's it. I'm bigger than you are.
Exactly.
I've got the leverage. And that's his whole art of the deal, by the way, looking for leverage. Wherever he has leverage, he does that. Speaking of,
they make a fetish about that. Jared Kushner, whose reputation before he entered government was that he was an imbecile who couldn't get anything right, who managed to bankrupt his family company by buying... Right. And
six,
way
six,
overpaying
six.
66
Park Avenue.
Sixth Avenue. Avenue of the Americas. 666 Avenue of the Americas.
Okay.
Sixth Avenue. So he paid an enormous, and managed only to get out of it years later when, because of his role in the government, he was able to get one of the Arab countries to buy it from him.
Right.
He's regarded as the great inheritor of Trump's art of the deal. But
right.
Trump's art of the deal is, and Jared Kushner's art of the deal is, not to negotiate a deal, but just to get to a point where you essentially sign a letter of intent and say, see, I got a deal.
The details don't matter.
Yeah.
What matters is the headline.
Yeah. But there is no deal without the details. And in fact, every deal that fails on the details. That's how it works. But I got a deal. But you don't have a deal. There is no deal. There's no reason to think that anything that Trump is doing in foreign affairs, I avoided eight wars, or I ended eight wars. Not one of those deals is actually a deal, just like most of his tariff deals are not deals.
Right. He ended the fighting between Armenia and Argentina, which doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think it was or Albania and Azerbaijan, right? Neither of which have armies, neither of which have air forces,
Or fight, they're not fighting each
of, neither of which are enemies of each other, neither of which were fighting.
other.
Right, exactly. But he ended the war between them. Exactly, right.
Yeah, give me the Nobel Prize.
Yeah. Well, they didn't give him the Nobel Prize. So he said, but the one they did give it to said she was accepting it in his honor. Therefore, he really got it. Okay, fair enough.
Well, he was
That's like a
threatening.
deal.
Yeah, he was threatening Norway to put tariffs on because the Nobel Committee
Yeah.
wouldn't give him the Nobel Prize.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it does seem like he'd like to go to war with Venezuela.
Trying, he seems to have given up on going to war over Greenland, at least for the time being.
For the moment,
So
right.
we'll
But
see.
he does want to go to war with Venezuela. And that's his style. When he sends troops into wherever the hell he sends troops domestically, it's not to solve a problem because the problem doesn't exist that he says he's sending his troops in to solve. He's sending there to create a crisis, to provoke a confrontation, to justify having sent and keeping the troops there, because it's not today's problem that he's trying to solve. It's the 26 election problem that he's trying to solve, to make sure that either if that election has to take place, that he can suppress the vote and win that election. That's the whole point of sending these troops into Chicago, into Portland, into wherever the hell he wants to send them. I think he wants to make sure that if somehow he can't annul the election by declaring a national emergency, which I think he'd love to do, he can have an election in an atmosphere where people are afraid to come out to vote because it's patrolled by cops, by police, army. So that's what he's doing. That's exactly what I think is going on here.
And get people used to having troops walk in their streets.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you've ever been to some of these foreign countries where you have military rule or things like that, even non-military rule. I remember many years ago, I had a vacation, went to Martinique down there and got to the airport, and the French army was with machine guns and rifles standing in the airport.
That's right.
What
That
wasn't
that's a chilling experience.
is. It is. There are plenty of places that are like that. Plenty of places that are like that.
Or how about you say, well, anybody can carry an open carry state. Now you go to a demonstration. Opponents show up at the demonstration. They've all got guns on them. You're going to think twice about going to a demonstration. Or, if you're at the demonstration, to staying there. Why would you want to get shot? These people are not disciplined. These people do what they want to do. And even if they got reprimanded for it afterwards, meanwhile, you're shot. That's the atmosphere he's not only creating, that's the conditions he's creating. And the whole point of it is to make sure that what the liberals think is something that cannot be wiped out is being wiped out in front of their eyes. The right to peaceable assembly, to freedom, free speech, and so forth and so on.
Yeah, well, don't forget, next Saturday is No King's Day,
That's
another
right.
day of rallying.
Which Mike Johnson says is a demonstration by Antifa and the ultra left Hamas supporters against America. That's what he said this week.
It's always Antifa,
Yeah, it's always
right?
Antifa. But you know what they used to say in World War II, you're either an anti-fascist or an anti-Semite.
Antifa was were the troops that landed at Normandy.
Exactly. That's exactly right. The reason you're not talking German right now in this conversation is because of Antifa.
Anyhow, we'll have to see. Our $20 billion going to Argentina, which is going to bail out some other billionaires who bought Argentina currency or bought Argentina bonds or whatever.
Yeah, they bought it at a discount. They want to make sure they get sold at face value. It's a great scam. Anyway, we're done for this week.
We'll see you next week,
See you next
and
week.
No King's Day.
No
All
King's
right.
Day.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk.
Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.